electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Back at about 25 after the hour, and I've got to have my email facing me, and I inadvertently hit something up in like the upper right hand corner. And I'm slowly trying to move everything to a Gmail address, you know, after years of having this terrible Time Warner address, which is really the only email I ever had. They've got that .r. If you live upstate New York, NICAP, NYCAP, New York Capital District, NICAP.RR.com. The world's worst. So anyway, I'm making the transit. I accidentally hit something on the Gmail, and where it said oldest, and there's emails going back to 2014. I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing here? Here's a rental car reservation from 2016. I think I'm good. Why is this still here? I'll tell you. So there we go. That'll be something. I guess that's something I got to figure out how to get rid of. It looks like there's about 14,000 of these that can be purged. My God. There's Sid. Sid Fernando, good morning.
Hey, Steve, good morning.
how was your Breeders' Cup?
It was really, enjoyable. I agree with everything he said with Dick earlier today. That Friday was such a sour taste for everybody, but in general, the racing was great.
What do you make of some of the biggest themes? And of course, our perspective is largely on the breeding end. And so, when you look at, obviously the Dubawi. What it means to Godolphin and Dubawi's three winners. It's just pretty remarkable. The two Japanese winners I think has a good impact long term. And then after that, it's your general sire list assortment, including. Into Mischief with Life is Good, and Uncle Mo gets Golden Pal. Hard Spun gets Aloha West into the winner's circle. Painter, of course, kind of a meat and potatoes stallion. Nick's Go. Quality Road, Corniche. Gunrunner continues his outstanding freshman season. And then you had a couple of the international names that were not Dubawi related. National Defense, the sire of Twilight Gleaming, and Fastnet Rock, Pizza Bianca's sire. Talk a little bit about the impact of these results.
Well, there were 14 races, right? Was that 14 Breeders' Cup races?
Uh-huh.
I believe so. Yeah. So, 7 of the 14 were sired by, foreign-bred stallions, or stallions standing abroad. The three Dubawi, and you have Australian bred fastnet rock, National Defense, and GB, and the two Japanese horses. So out of the 14, 7 were actually foreign, which is pretty significant, I think.
Oh yeah.
Then you just listed off some of the excellent American stallions, including one CC by Elusive Quality, who's no longer active, but he's the sire of Quality Road, who had Corniche. So right. you had some up and coming sires in the making, like, as you pointed out, Gun Runner. There's some real standouts on our scene, like obviously the Mischief and Uncle Mo. You had some solid stallions like Elusive Quality and Hard Spun. And then you had Painter, who stands for $7,500. And then that race, Painter defeated Stallion Platonico, the sire of the Medina Spirit, who stands for, five. So, you had in the big dirt race featured, two very affordable stallions, to put it that way. And then the fourth horse, of course, was Hot Rod Charlie by Oxbow, another one of those. It was sandwiched by Tappet's Essential Quality. So I think he had a real wide spectrum of representation. Of course, the standout, as you pointed out, was the Godolphin Stallion Dubawi with three, and he'll stand next year for £250,000, I believe, which is the most expensive stallion in Europe, now that Galileo is no longer breeding. That's more than the $200,000 for Frankel. And, the timely Into Mischief win, he's just been dominating everything here, but you saw the flipping into the tail, you saw most of the top lots were in fold to him, including that mirror by Distorted Humor in full to him, the Dam of Guarana, who is by Distorted Humor, and in full to Into Mischief, so that foal is going to be bred like, not only Life is Good, but Practical Joke as well. Into Mischief out of the Distorted Humor mirror. And of course, the sale yesterday was just like we've been talking about, the yearling sales up. People are going to want the mirrors. And, $103 million in sales, which I think was the second highest for that sale ever.
Yeah.
And the significant Japanese participation, they accounted for like $34 million of that total. Which is right up their wheelhouse. They like to buy those grade one young American race fillies. Swiss Skydiver, for example, going to Japan. Not among many others, but, it's a typical profile for them. They love American race mares, whether they raced on Lasix or not. As long as they raced here on dirt, they love them.
Yeah, it seems that every year this conversation, Sid, that we bring out the reminder of the phony mantra that the rest of the world doesn't want our bloodstock. That's all we heard the last 15 years, and then of course in the next breath we hear, Oh, all of our best mares are being taken away. Which is it?
That's right.
Which is it? Which is it, folks? either they can't. It can't be both. Can't be both.
Yeah.
Nobody wants our bloodstock, and all of our best mares are being bought. Which is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At some point, you've got to, you know, really address that hypocrisy, because, you know, it just goes hand in hand with just the general BS stuff that comes out of her leadership that is, you know, thoroughly illustrated in that fiasco on Breeders' Cup Friday, which is, you know, scratching a horse, putting it back in the pool, taking it out again to run without a betting interest. I mean, you know, it's too bad it wasn't on October 31, because typical headless horseman move.
Well, one thing that about it that it really kind of is, I don't want to say bewildering, but despite what transpired on Friday, they come back on Saturday and they set, you know, a handle record. Probably you can anticipate or expect that, you know, 30% of the handle probably is CAW money, but still, I mean, that's in line with the handle in general. But the fact that they set a handle record where you had a 5-horse field in one of your races, and you mm-hmm. that was on Saturday, and you had a 6-horse field in one of your races on Friday. I mean, so despite, you know, two absolutely shockingly small fields, and really you didn't have exactly you didn't have an overflow gate in the dirt mile, in the sprint, in the classic, you ended up with 9 after the scratch. So you didn't exactly even have a series of full field races to offer, and it still set a handle record. So somebody's betting.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people are betting, and as annoyed as we all were, I mean, I wrote a thing on Saturday morning when I put up my, or late Friday night when I put up my Saturday selections. I said, I it's tough to be motivated and excited about Saturday.
Kind of really captured the feel entering that morning.
And then as the day, unfolded, you love racing and you want, you want to be engaged, and, you know, these are horses that you've been following all year, and it's a high level of competition, and it's, you know, wagering opportunities that are unique that you're not going to see all that often. So you try to, and that's what we all face as players, you know, this was a very high level gaffe of just shocking proportion. There is, however, on a fairly regular basis, you know, similar incidents that, you know, that will irk you, you know, Monday through Sunday the rest of the year. We all get annoyed at, you know, a steward decision that, you know, might have been 60-40, and it goes against you, and you're like, ugh, all right, we can accept that. This was different. This was just glaring.
Yeah, it was. It really was. Fortunately, the Saturday, you know, some great racing, and that still, you know, still hurts people. Chuck Simon in his podcast, I listened to it yesterday, Big Monday Show. He just went off on it as well. Rightfully so. You know, I texted him and said, yeah, I agree with you. as you did, and you know, you're not gonna affect change if you just you know, sit by complacently. Sometimes you need those messengers to bring it out there, and you know, props to you and guys like Chuck, you know, for doing it.
We're all pretty defenseless. You know, let's be honest. We don't have. There's really not a.
That was the glaring thing about it, was that the players were just stuck there taking a beating, while the owner got a chance to run. And his horse wasn't in the betting pool, but he was able to earn purse money, right? Win it. Mm-hmm. Everybody was taken care of except for the bettors, and that, you know, that ultimately. If you're watching this thing on TV like I was, that just stuck out, right? But the bettors were just getting absolutely raked over the coals on that one.
Yeah. There's no other way to characterize it. Period. No doubt. You know, there's also, there's one thing that, as we just went through that list, that occurs to me, because when you mentioned Painter and 7500, made me think of, you know, some other Breeders' Cup Classic winners that, you know, that came from kind of rank and file stallions. And, you know, Fort Larned was by E. Dubai, you know, for instance. But it also occurs to me, right? Yeah, there's this attempt. There's an attempt that you see on the social media front to somehow further impugn Baffert by citing the record of the stallions that have gone into service. And it does occur to me that with Painter getting Nick's Go and looking at Lucky getting Accelerate, both of those winners in the last 4 years trained by other horsemen, Cox and Sadler, kind of flies in the face of that. You know, I see people rushing to, you know, to try to, you know, connect dots somehow that when it comes to those, you know, to the roster of stallions.
Well, you know, part of
Baffert trained.
Part of the reason that this idea is kind of misunderstood is because the horse studs now that were trained by Baffert were part of a group of horses that he trained when he was buying oddball horses, you know. Keep in mind that there's a big time lag between the types of stock that you buy and when they go to stud and establish themselves as stallions. So if you go back 10 years, he didn't have these quote unquote the Avengers and all these guys buying the top of the line bloodstock to give him, as say Pletcher did. You know, he had the Cavaniers, even Indian Charlie was by In Excess. Indian Charlie is another horse of his that went on to become an exceptional sire, and it's the sire of Uncle Mo. But it was kind of an off-bred horse, quote-unquote, you know? So he did not have the types of that commercial bloodstock, the Real Quiet, the Midnight Loot, who's by Real Quiet, another good stallion, by the way. So he didn't really have, you know, the AP Indies, the Stormcats, the Mr. Prospectors of those eras, the Danzigs. He didn't have those. He had horses that he had to buy that were more based on physique and stuff rather than pedigree. It's only in the last decade that he's been starting to get these types of better bred horses. And, you know, Pioneer of the Nile is another one he trained, who ended up siring American Pharaoh, who he trained, who's turning into a pretty good stallion. But those are more better bred horses in the later part of his career, you know, than the ones that he started out with that would have gone to stud to kind of determine how the horses he trained were. So that's something that, again, in a historical perspective, needs to be added to, you know, this impugning of his stock.
Yeah. It just occurred to me as I was looking at the stallion, at the sires of the Breeders' Cup Classic winners, because there has been plenty that were just sort of, you know, seemingly oddball. None more than E. Dubai getting Fort Larned. That was the year, I think, also that Wise Dan also won on that card, and by Wiseman's Ferry. That was a year, Sid, if you'll recall, we talked about it. It was like this crazy mishmash of oddball stallions that got Breeders' Cup winners that year.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's pretty funny. The conversation I wanted to slip in because I'll forget it if I don't. When the Japanese topic came up with Dick Powell earlier, I reached out to Tim Schramm at Breeders' Cup. I was curious, and Tim reports that the Japanese handle number contributed $11.7 million to the total.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And by the way,
I realized after I'd been on your show last week, when I was talking about the Japanese trainers and Mr. Mori, I meant Mr. Yahagi. So I created a terrible error on your show last week. I apologize. It's Mr. Yahagi who keeps taking horses abroad. And I just winced when he had the two winners because I realized I had misspoken. So belated apologies on that.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. Well, Dick gave us the Hong Kong numbers, too. So the international portion of the Breeders' Cup goal certainly... You know, certainly paying off, and we'll certainly see more Japanese, you would imagine, after this success. And then, of course, Sid told us, you see what Mr. Yoshida and everybody yesterday, and we'll see how they get involved at Keeneland. And also, I'll bring up with you, Sid, the Korean aspect too, that having KRA as the campaigner of Nick's Go has got to have some positive ramifications given the development of the Korean racing product.
Yeah, exactly. And the Koreans, you know, are obviously buy at a much lower price point than the Japanese, and this horse. And this horse, Nick's Go, was initially purchased here to race here and then go to Korea to go to stud. But, you know, because of the stature he's attained here, you're having some interesting dynamics taking place because the Korea Racing Association, which owns the horse, is going to be standing the horse in TaylorMade. So a foreign entity is going to be standing the horse here. Not that it's surprising with foreign entities standing horses, because we're used to Coolmore and Godolphin doing that. But what's interesting in this case is these are state-sponsored foreign entities, so we're state-backed or state-funded foreign entities, and the Korea Racing Association is now going to stand Nick's Go here, just as the Turkish Jockey Club is standing Daredevil at Lane's End. Daredevil left, came back after the success of, obviously, Swiss Skydiver. Those are kind of interesting developments that are new to international racing. It's, I guess, part of that whole obvious globalization of the game catchword that's always thrown around. But it's, you know, the foreign money is significant. Foreign participation is significant, and these are just some of the elements of it we're seeing.
Well, speaking of developments, Sid, I do want to get a couple of minutes before we wrap. Nick Luck is joining us next. A very international theme today. The pieces of news that sort of were lost in the crush of Breeders' Cup, including Delaware Park being sold and a few other things. I mentioned this morning Jerry Hollendorfer petitioning the court to be able to run at Santa Anita. We'll see how that turns out. You seized on a piece of news that absolutely has gotten no notice, and that is the highest court in the land addressing the Murray Rojas conviction. And tomorrow, for those that didn't follow and weren't aware, you're going to lay out some very important legalese that might not sit so well with certain industry individuals.
Yeah, no, thanks for bringing that up. I sent that to you so you could take a look at it because it'll come out tonight for Thursday TDN. It's a column that's entitled Misbranding Conviction Doomed by Fed Error. And as you pointed out, really, this is a really important ruling by the Supreme Court that's really, I haven't seen it covered either. Of course, it just happened on the Monday of Breeders' Cup week last week, so, you know, with all the Breeders' Cup news, but if you're interested in this issue, I recommend you read the TDN Thursday issue, my column in it. It'll be out tonight. But essentially, everybody knows about this long-running Fed investigation of Penn National that led to the conviction of trainer Murray Rojas. She was convicted and sentenced to jail time. On federal charges for stuff that occurred in Pennsylvania, which ordinarily would have been, you know, a state charge, but the feds wanted to kind of, it's part of this whole thing where it's going through, right, where HISA and more federal involvement, this kind of predates that, but it was a precursor to it, and so the feds used misbranding charges that we're all familiar with now, with the Jason Service and Navarro indictments and sentences of, you know. And so this misbranding charge, which is misbranding on the FDCA, Federal Drug and Cosmetics Act, which is regulated in interstate commerce, the feds use this to convict her. She was convicted in district court. It was affirmed in the Third Circuit Appeals, and she continued to fight it and asked for a petition to have it heard in the Supreme Court. Only 1% of petitions get heard. Hers, however, got heard, and the irony is there was an amicus brief filed by, you know, the ACUF, very highly conservative, states' rights, libertarian, individual liberty, highly conservative, federalist principled organization. They supported the petition, but the biggest thing, Steve, was that the government itself came out in a brief and agreed that they made an error and she was not guilty of misbranding, which was just a stunning admittance of defeat. And so the Supreme Court did hear it and vacated the federal charges against her. And this is a really important piece of news because it's going to have ramifications, possibly, for the misbranding charges against Jason Service now. And moreover, in general, for concepts of federal overreach that are part of the lawsuits against Heisa filed by the attorneys general of several red states. So it may be legalese, but it's conceptually very important for the game, and everybody's going to, as I quoted MF Doom, the legendary underground rapper, be wearing your thinking cap, quote unquote. By the way, that's from just an absolutely classic song called Antimatter, but this is an important piece of news, and I hope people do read it because it needs to be digested very carefully.
Well, given your interest and expertise in the area, it'll be very clear the way you laid it out to people. They'll understand the ramifications, I would imagine, and where things could unfold from here.
So. Yeah, it certainly opens the possibilities, and it really, more importantly, as Sis Emily said to me after she read it, it's going to make you think. And the people that, getting back to how we started this conversation with the fiasco on Leadership Day, we need to think things out clearly. We can't just react after the fact. And I think that's really the takeaway here, you know.
Yeah. Absolute. And that's a theme that's been repeated every time there's any kind of a crisis that confronts the industry. There's the lack of a strategic plan and addressing systemic issues that put the game where it is. I mean, that over and over again.
Yeah.
And of course, at the heart of a lot of that is the failure to recognize the principal thrust of the game, which is that it's a betting enterprise. It's a wagering game. That's what drives.
The game does not exist without that component.
Yeah, exactly. And for those that argue that that's not the case, we love Steeplechase. Steeplechase operates largely through patronage, and it doesn't. It certainly loves having the opportunity to be to have wagering on it, but it has survived without wagering, and it would continue to. Our game doesn't, and everyone constantly sounding alarm bells about the gaming revenues, and the potential for those to dissipate or disappear entirely, and where would you be? And the key is that you haven't cultivated the wagering product the way you should. And there's been two concerns that you've had: racetrack management and industry management that was for years, going back decades, was disgusted by having to to deal with a wagering public, and then a secondary problem of some that understand but don't really take an interest in the gaming portion, the gambling portion, and how important it is to be making the wagering product as attractive as possible. So this goes on and on. I appreciate. I think we lost Sid, but top of the hour too. Appreciate it. You can read Sid's piece later tonight at TDN. So we'll stay here, and Nick Luck is going to join us next, and then Seth Merrill. So, and you know, to continue in that vein, I mean, we. You know, the pricing structure, you know, which to the industry's credit, at least the drum beating about the takeout, the pricing, that found a purchase, essentially. The management largely came to understand what the message has been from players, and has absolutely tried and you know, has specifically utilized the pick five as a vehicle for a, you know, an aggressive pricing, but there's so much more. The whips, of course, could stand a real trimming, get them down, the way Barry Schwartz was trying to do at Naira. He got him down to 14%. So, this is a rare a Nick Luck visit with the Luck family in tow, I think. Nick, good morning.
Hello, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm great. And in all the years we've all the conversations we've had when you're home, I don't think the girls have ever made an appearance.
Well, that's Anthony, my 3-year-old, who's in the back of my car at the moment, Steve. I'm just going to drop them to pick up their sister at school, and then I'm all yours. But we can talk. It's all good.
I love it. Well, that's great. It was a Breeders' Cup that. As memorable as any, certainly when it came to the international participants, put on quite a show. I suppose we have to start, Nick, with Charlie Appleby and William Buick and Godolphin, because that was kind of a real cherry on the sundae for their year.
Why? It's the most successful international raid on any race meeting in the history of thoroughbred racing, isn't it? I can't think of a comparable one. I can think of wonderful, great pioneering achievements, and notably of, you know, Dermot Weld winning the Melbourne Cup with Vintage Crop and the Belmont Stakes in 1990. But in terms of the extent of the smash and grab that Appleby performed with, as it transpired, three winners from just four runners, it's pretty remarkable, really.
Agreed, and of course, starting on Friday, you basically had the situation aside, Nick, which I do want to talk to you about the deportment of import horses around the gate, and what is going to come of Friday's result, but this horse reminded of Mendelssohn in a lot of ways, modern games.
Yeah, I think he's a slightly different model to Mendelssohn, isn't he? He's a slightly neater model, and probably has more of the profile of your typical turf miler, really, I think, modern games than perhaps Mendelssohn did. But certainly a very smart horse, and evidently, and the one thing that I think united modern games and Space Blues, one of the other Appleby winners, a tremendous temperament through the week, you know, just a, a really pretty unflappable horse, and to do what he did, having had to endure what happened to him in the gate and then after, I thought was sort of testament to his temperament, really, and I thought that was most impressive. He probably went into the race, as we discussed beforehand, the fourth or fifth best European juvenile according to Time Form, and we knew that if he repeated that, that he'd be right there, and it was sort of pleasing to see him do what he did. And I, the horse who finished second but first for betting purposes, I'd seen win the race at Keeneland, and I'd been deeply impressed with him that day. Ironically, remember what happened to him at Keeneland? He broke through the gate and then still won
yes.
the race.
Yes.
But yeah, so I think the ball's not bad, and yeah, he's a nice horse, Modern Games. I'd imagine he'll be another string to Appleby's already burgeoning 2,000 guineas bow, as he has the Juvos Winner Native Trail and Kariba. Appleby's probably got three of the five best juveniles in juvenile colts in Europe now.
The rest of the lineup, before we talk about, I want to stick with Godolphin for a second, then we'll circle back, but the rest of that lineup really did not fare well. Dubawi Legend chased and backed up, and really Glanton disappointed. There wasn't a lot else that went right in the boys' turf.
Yeah, Dubawi Legend was the sort of form horse coming into the race. He had a bad gait, as we know, but actually I thought he got a great position after about two furlongs. I thought, this will run a race. For me, he was doing it all on one breath, though, and I just don't think he quite saw it out. He might be a sprinter, you know, or at least he might be a sort of horse that wants campaigning at 6 or 7 for the time being, while he's still got that sort of elements of natural freshness to him. I didn't love him for the race, just because of the way he races. But he's still a very useful horse if they can get him in the right slots next year.
Well, once the dust settled and everybody got to come back for Saturday, the two performances that basically, you know, made for this dominant afternoon or dominant weekend. Start with Space Blues, and there's been a lot of Euro favorites that have come from the mile, Nick, and have failed, and I think people were kind of lining up to maybe try to find an alternate to Space Blues, but he was really really kind of came through, and it seems like it's one of the underappreciated performances of the weekend.
Yeah, he's probably been a slightly underappreciated horse through his entire career. I was actually voicing the Space Blue Stallion promo today for Darley. And he's won in California, Deauville, Newmarket, York, Riyadh. He's a splendid animal. He really is. He bear in mind, he won the Prix de la Forêt on bottomless ground at Longchamp, and then turned up and won, on a firm turf at Del Mar. He's not very big. He's completely unflappable. He's a really cool little horse, and William Buick, obviously very fond of him, and you can see why. I think he makes quite an appealing stallion prospect, I think. He's probably the fastest son of Dubawi. He'd certainly be the fastest stallion son of Dubawi. With pattern race form from 6.5 up to a mile. And yeah, I thought it was very impressive. He was easily the best.
Agreed. And as you fold in the third of the Dubawi winners, when we talk about Yabir in the turf, it also really was a display of William Buick's abilities, because the three wins came from three different places on the racetrack, near the pace, mid-pack stalking, and from the deep close.
Yeah, and I mean, don't forget, there was one that got away as well. I still maintain that if Ordaria had got any kind of run, she'd have gone pretty close to winning the Fillion Mare Turf. But anyway, that's by the by. As you say, the three winning rides were excellent ones. He looks very assured on the international stage. And yeah, the Breeders' Cup was a pretty intimidating and slightly unkind place for him at the beginning of his career. he had two absolute shockers on the Fugue, if you remember, in the Philly and Mayor Turf.
Oh, that's right.
You know, that could have dented a lesser man's confidence, but he's grown and grown as a rider in standing over recent seasons, and he was very impressive. I thought Yabir is a strange horse. He's definitely got something of the night about him, you know, hence why he was gelded in the middle of the season, and he put one shocking run in at Goodwood in between all his wins, where he was just, you know, way too keen and really grabbed hold, and then he sort of spat the dummy out at Belmont Park and sort of did that extraordinary manoeuvre all the way around the field. He's definitely an unorthodox customer, but he raced much more sweetly on Saturday than I've ever seen him race before. And again, it's sort of one of those, you sort of have to revise your preconceived opinion about him and sort of realise that he's actually probably a pretty smart little distance horse. You know, having thought he was a sort of mezzanine level performer and you know, half a grade below the very best, I've sort of had to revise that, and I think he's going to again look at Appleby next year. I said he's had three of the top five juvenile colts. He's going to have the top three four-year-olds as well in Adair, Hurricane Lane, and this horse.
How about that? You know, the fact that he's been gelded, little unusual, right? I mean, on the Godolphin front, I can't really
not that unusual nowadays. You see, this has been a significant policy shift. It was a time when horses who raced for Shane Malamud or members of his family were hardly ever gelded, and you'd get thousands of these horses end up in horses in training sales who hadn't quite reached their potential. They'd go off to another stable with the tackle off, and they'd sort of be completely revitalised. Well, I, the point is, they've got so many good stallions now, so many good horses. If a horse isn't going to... It needs to be gelded to reach its potential, they will geld that horse. They've done it very successfully with Yabir, but also with several others this season to good effect. I remember the Melbourne Cup winner, Cross Counter, was gelded at a similar point in his career because he was a bit of a handful. There's another horse that won in Paris over Arc Weekend, won a Group 2, again, gelded in the middle of his three-year-old season. They don't mind doing it if they think it's going to yield the right results. They thought Yabir was going to be a Derby horse. You know, he was hanging the latch of it. He wasn't going to make the Derby, so they cut him, and it's had remarkable results.
Nick, there's a case I haven't really thought about, where we've been so focused on the three-year-old championship discussion since Saturday. I really haven't thought about it, but he's going to get plenty of votes and consideration as the turf champion in the U.S. with the two wins.
Yeah, I normally don't love ticking the box for a sort of a European Breeders' Cup winner to be the horse mm-hmm. of the year, but I think I probably will this time. I think I probably will, because it's such a shame domestic spending didn't run, isn't it?
No,
it really is.
That's awful.
That was sad. My heart sank when I saw that. It really robbed the race of a significant amount of interest. Who's going to be on the ballot paper, Steve? Who do you think is going to be the lineup? Presumably
that's a
domestic
great.
Spending, your beer. Will Space Blues be on there?
With the mile, I always, unless you're a Goldakova, I need to see, you know, at least a second run, or at least a trip to Woodbine for one of their
yeah.
international things over the years. Who was it? Mrs. Lindsay, I think, may have. Was that the mayor? There was somebody like that ran well. I don't know. I mean, it was such a undefined turf season, really, this year. I mean, who else even comes to mind beside domestic spending?
Exactly. I mean, so the answer to your question is, yes, Yabir will probably end up winning, won't he?
He might. Smooth like straight. Smooth like straight had a. It's funny, he didn't win a lot, but he certainly ran a lot of courageous races.
Hmm. I know, but it's a leap of the imagination.
It is.
I'd say to give him an Eclipse Award.
What do you have? You heard anything about Tarnawa's no-show effort?
You know what? I think that was kind of explained before the race, really, by Dermot Wells. He was worried that she'd had a very hard race in the arc, and I think that just took its toll, really. I think she had two very hard races. She had a hard race in the Irish Champion Stakes against St. Mark's Basilica, you know, who had claims to being the best horse in Europe this year, and you know, she was taken right off the track that day by him as well, onto that very firm ground, right almost by the road, and then she had to get through the bog in France, and she did everything bar win. And I just think the you know, cumulative effect of those two races took their toll. She came into the Breeders' Cup last year on an upward curve. She was in the peak of her powers, and I really think this year Dermot has trained her for the arc. He trained her to peak on arc day, and that I think she did. And I think she just bounced the other day. I think it's as simple as that. It was just looked like a listless run. I didn't think she looked brilliant in her coat, or at least not as well as I've seen her look before. But she, you know, she retired having had a very good career.
I do want to mention, before we kind of survey other races and move away from the Godolphin discussion, Tiona ran very credibly. That was a very nice effort for a three-year-old filly against that cast.
Yeah, it was a super performance. I actually thought she was going to win at one point, turning for home. Aha! Now, a couple of things crossed my mind. First of all, do you think they rued the decision not to run in the fillies race? Perhaps. Second, I think Connections were a little bit disappointed. Which tells you how highly they regard her. I'm pretty sure that Roger Varian believes that she's about the best he's trained. And next year she could be very exciting. If she goes the right way, she could be very exciting.
Well, and I'm just thinking, was Found 3 years old when she won?
Found beat Golden Horn, didn't she? Yes, I think she was three when she won, and then she came back and finished second to Highland Reel the following year when she was four, I think. Or was she four and five? I'm pretty sure she was three when she won.
I think so, too. And I do also want to mention that for as much grief as Japan took leading up to this weekend, ran very well.
Yes. Yeah, and Broome. I mean, Broome ran a mighty race.
Yes.
I mean, that really did take me by surprise. I mean, when Frankie Dettori was slated to ride Broome, he gave the horse absolutely no chance. And, of course, they get Gerard Ortiz, who's on fire on the horse. And he rode him with so much belief. And he's just a thorough stayer who likes fast ground. And he just rode him accordingly. And very, very nearly pulled it off.
Circle back to the filly and mare turf, and you mentioned Adaria, who, upon further review and watching replays, very, very well got stymied. I think people thought that she just didn't really fire, but the win for Japan that ends up being one of the. I know they, you know, they win an hour later too, an hour and a half later in the distaff, but this was a win that. You know, it seemed like it had potential, and she absolutely comes through, and it's an important win, I think, for them, for the Japanese, and for the future of their participation here.
Yeah, one wag said afterwards, imagine what's going to happen when they start bringing the good horses over. but I mean, in fairness, she is a good horse, and she's already proved that by running Mishriff and Chronogenesis. You know, to within a couple of short heads in the Shima Classic, and you knew that a repeat of that would be near enough, good enough. But I thought she showed great tenacity, and as you rightly point out, the significance of the win was more what it meant for Japanese participation in this event, and it's something that the Breeders' Cup have been actively cultivating, but went to particular efforts this year to secure. and it's paid off. I honestly think it changes the dynamic of the whole event. If you've got three major horse racing continents represented, you genuinely do start to buy the idea that this is a world championship. Yeah, that nomenclature has been widely derided by sniffy people in my part of the world down the years, but you know, it's huge. You know, Japan is a massive racing nation. There is no country in the world, not even Australia, that takes fandom to the level that Japan does in terms of its support for horse racing. And I think this could just be absolutely massive for this event.
Talk about Wesley Ward's success on the 2 days. We had him on yesterday, Nick, and the way his two winners just kind of blitzed Golden Pal on Saturday and Twilight Gleaming to start the entire proceedings. He's pretty tough to hold down. I'm so impressed with what he does, and at this point, it's obvious how consistent the excellence that he produces.
Yeah, I'd love to see Golden Pal have another try at something in one of the big sprints in the UK. To be honest, I can only draw the conclusion that he wasn't quite at his best in the Nunthorpe at York. I know everyone says, oh, well, it was a straightaway track and he needs a bend and you can get a breather in round the bend and blah, blah. I'm sure that's true, but he wasn't exactly stopping the other day. He saw it out really well. And I was dazzled. I don't think I've ever seen a horse come out the gate as quickly as that. I mean, you stop the race after about 100 yards, it was game over.
Yeah.
Extraordinary performance.
and of course it was, you know, it came 24 hours after the 2-year-old did the same thing. I mean, that horse looked like he was just plopped down in front of the gate as opposed to leaving it. It was stunning. And everybody else was flat-footed. I mean, there was just no, I mean, Lieutenant Dan in the senior race obviously stayed close, but you know, when it came to the baby side, it was really never in doubt. I mean, Go Bears Go was making progress and ran very well for David Loughnan, but the result was not in question.
Well, Go Bears Go ran an amazing race, because I'm not even sure those closest to the horse thought that the 5-furlong race was really what he wanted. You know, I've got to confess, if he'd been mine, I'd have put him in the long race, but they already had a horse for that. They didn't run particularly well. But, yeah, I thought that was an amazing performance. Now, Dave Loughnan,
I think you're going to have to take very seriously if he brings horses to the States again, because some trainers just know what they're doing when they travel these horses, and others, well, don't really, and he certainly falls into the former category.
Put the blinkers on, and this was off of a series of high-level tries in the Phoenix, the Middle Park, and the Dewhurst, and you know, he had run credibly, but not like this. The terrific performance to be second, and then you know, everybody else was well back. Twilight Jet tried to tend the pace from inside, and boy, Nick, Twilight Jet looked like a coiled spring pre-race. That he had the neck bowed and he looked ready to explode, but it just didn't happen.
That's him all over, really. That's him all over. I thought he'd run a bit better. But he just found them getting away from him a little bit, Steve, to be honest. And you know, he'll carry on. I think he'll carry on paying his way, because he's a great enthusiast.
What about the girls' race, too? Let's talk about the juvenile fillies, because Malavath, very quietly, that was a terrific effort. And I haven't heard, everybody's talked about the winner, Pizza Bianca, and the miraculous ride by Ortiz, and Haughty, who ran very well for Chad Brown from out wide. But Malavath, that was a outstanding effort, and it took Ortiz, you know, magic to stop her from winning.
Don't think it was a brilliant race, but I think the winner's quite good. Like, I don't think there was that much depth in it. And the French filly, Malavath, she's a nice prospect. I know the owners have turned out a lot of money for her before the race, but I think the winner's quite smart. I saw her in Canada when she was... I think she was just out-experienced, really, by the Godolphin filly. And I just think with that... I thought that brought her forward perfectly. I thought it was a very good bit of training by Christophe Clément. Those Canadian races, yeah, at the time, people always say, oh, they're not very good. They're not very strong. But it's amazing how often they chuck up, you know, Breeders' Cup winners. I just think the timing of them is perfect. I think it gives you the perfect run into the Breeders' Cup. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And also, for a young horse, it's a lovely experience as well. You know, that really wide, sweeping turf track at Woodbine. It's just a perfect way of bringing on a young horse. You just have to bear with me. I'm just walking past the building site. Now, you'll laugh because I've had to do an emergency trip to the shop because I went to get my dinner jacket off the peg to attend tonight's Cartier Awards, which is kind of like our Eclipse Awards.
Yes.
And it'd be... Because I hadn't worn it since before the pandemic, the moths had got to it and had eaten a hole right through my dress trousers in a rather unfortunate place. So I've had to do an emergency trip to Mossbrook in Kingston to get myself a new pair of dress trousers. Otherwise, I will not be attending the Cartier Awards tonight.
Well, bring the other pair to the Weaver. The Weaver will
repair. Well, I think, to be honest, I think the Weaver has got his or her work cut out trying to sort those out. See,
well, what kind of moths do you have at home? Those have got to be like Mothra.
Well, I mean, I've just had to go and buy a whole load of moth anti-moth stuff. As I say, because it hadn't come off the rail.
Oh,
so, like,
so
I don't know, thick end of 2 years. You see?
I know. I'm. That's great.
I was rather upset. I've had it since I was about 25. So there we go. So that is why you catch me, like, first of all, ferrying my kids around, and then coming to do this. But luckily, there are some things I can multitask in.
Well, let me round out the conversation too. I always gravitate, obviously, to the participation of the international runners, but there was plenty of conversation conducted by you after the main track wins. I had Wayne Catalano on Monday. You had a nice exchange with Wayne, and you know, it's got to be pretty infectious. You must have seen how happy everybody was for him to win that sprint.
Oh, I thought that was lovely, and we had him on the cocktail show I do with Brittany on the Wednesday, and he was brilliant, and he was pretty confident too. But I mean, as he said, it's the fact that he's little bit down on numbers to what he was, and the fact that it was a win at senior level rather than with a two-year-old, I think that meant an awful lot to him. The owners have shown him admirable loyalty, and yeah, I was just absolutely thrilled for him. What a great character! And the other thing that touched me was that he was the one person who sought me out on the Monday afternoon because he really wanted to go on the record and say something about Miguel Mayner and what he knew of him, and I was absolutely thrilled for him. I thought that was a super performance, and for all Jackie's Warrior didn't show up, it was a fabulous horse race.
Oh, the sprint and then the distaff as well, you know, to have two photographs that were not instantly clear as to your winners. That elevates the afternoon.
Couple of things on that. You know how much I love racing in America. I mean, no one is ever going to have to twist my arm to turn up to a Breeders' Cup, or indeed to any of the gigs I do with you. But someone's got to sort out the photo finish technology and the freeze frame, because I'm pretty convinced that you wouldn't have been put away if you'd had the same sort of tech that most other countries do. I think you'd have figured out who the winner was quite a bit sooner. But anyway, that's by the by. I really did feel for Dunbar Road, because she's had such a sort of honourable career, really. And you thought, well, if ever there was a setup that was absolutely perfect for her, it was that. And she's going absolutely flat out. And to go down to a completely unconsidered Japanese horse must have been extremely galling. But funnily enough, Steve, I watched the race again last night. And Marsh Lorraine, he tanked into the race.
Mm.
I was sort of left with the impression that, you know, she sort of rather fell in her lap. But whilst some of the closers were being, you know, like Malathar was being shunted along from the outset because she couldn't go the gallop, Marsh Lorraine was always travelling fairly sweetly.
Yeah.
And as Ashim Murphy said, he almost got there too soon, because, you know, the way she was just easing through the field. That was a good ride, wasn't it, from someone who's not really accustomed to riding a load of Grade 1 dirt races. He's probably more prouder of that than he has been in just about anything else in his career, and rightfully so, I'd say.
Well, he said that. He proper acknowledged what a significant win he felt it was for him, for his career.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, you know, it's a terrific performance.
And Nick, in the classic, your impressions of, you know, what you expected from Nick's Go going in, and you know, especially in light of what transpired in the Distaff, where there was this frenetic pace, and knowing that Nick's Go was essentially in the same position that Latruska was going to be in the Distaff, what was your thought about how it might unfold and what happened?
Well, the one thing he wasn't going to get was an uncontested lead, wasn't it? He's not going to get an uncontested lead next go. Oh, yes, he is. Yes, he is going to get an uncontested lead. Now, you know, the universal bias is pace, isn't it? And that's what this horse has got in abundance. So it's all very well to say, oh, nothing took him on. But what would they have been doing to their own chances had they done so? And, of course, that was the dilemma that John Velasquez was countering with. And everyone said, oh, why didn't you drill him forward? Well, what do we think would have happened to Medina Spirit if he'd gone up there and engaged Nick's Go? And we'll never know, but I suspect he's ended up securing the best possible finishing position for himself. I'm not going to buy into some of the more outlandish conspiracy theories. They're just ridiculous. But Nick's Go, the way that he extended again late was not in the manner of a horse who would have been broken by company on the front end, I didn't think.
No, this, as Jay Pribman said, you could tell early on the backstretch that the way he was moving, it was going to be a surprise if somebody reeled him in.
Oh, I think so. I think so. You would sort of stop the race at halfway, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
If there was a slightly disappointing horse in the race, I think it was Hot Rod Charlie, because even though... Yeah, essential quality is just he's a thorough stayer, isn't he, really? And that's what he looked like there. But Hot Rod Charlie, I just thought he didn't have his usual zip. Or whether it was the effect of one too many hard races, I don't know. And he got that lovely seam up the inside turning to home. And I thought then he should have at least been a decent second from that position. But I was a little disappointed in the way he emptied late on. But, you know, it's just the Kentucky Derby form with a very good horse in front of them all, isn't it?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And going to be the horse of the year. Nick, before you go, too, I do want you to opine on a topic I've seemed to have floated here since Monday. I had one of the top gate crew managers in recent history, Bob Duncan, join us on Monday to talk about gate deportment. Is there something that can be done that, you know, after what we saw, to better prepare the imports for entering, standing, and leaving the gate in these races? Because it really is not fair to, you know, everybody else that is lined up in there. I was curious about your thoughts about this, because it just doesn't seem that there's as much focus on gate schooling from the international community.
It's interesting, because really they should be better in the American gates than they are at home, because the American gates are wider and I think a little less claustrophobic. I think it's probably, it might be something to do with the effect of the post parade on the horses, and then getting them very worked up beforehand that they're not used to. That's my best guess.
Interesting.
I mean, I saw Al Barr in Canada; he was absolutely fine at the gate. I mean, he missed the break, but I don't know, is the honest answer to your question, Steve. I honestly don't know. Maybe a bit more gate schooling during the week wouldn't go amiss. But I'd have to ask Charlie Appleby what he did in that respect beforehand. I mean, Master of the Seas was slightly different insofar as he's just gone up once. And he'd have, you know, I know this is a, if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle thing, but if he'd just gone up and the gates had opened, I think he'd have been fine. But it's the fact that his pole touched the superstructure and he was an automatic scratch. I mean, he wasn't horrendous. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Albar was upsetting because he got down in the gate. If the contention is that the European imports are more badly behaved in the gate, then it must be something to do with the way they're getting G'd up prior to the race, I would have thought, rather than, I don't know. I don't know whether any more gate schooling would make a big difference.
Yeah, and you would also, if you fold in, you know, what Wesley Ward does, and you know, in terms of, you know, particularly when we think about the 2-year-olds that come over to compete. I mean, the one thing we see consistently is, you know, if they've got early speed, they break on top. I mean, it and one thing historically that we've seen very regularly is international horses come over and kind of come out of the gate very casually and immediately put themselves at a disadvantage.
Yeah. That can often be the case. The horses just aren't trained the same way out of the gate in Europe as they are in the States, because the premium is not so much on getting that rapid early break.
Exactly. Well, I wanted to slip that in as well to the conversation.
I don't know. The honest answer is I don't really know, and I think I might do a little bit of digging and see what some of the trainers think and what some of the jockeys think about that.
Now that could be a luck on Sunday topic.
I'll take any idea I can get, Steve. very gratefully.
Well, and knowing how I rely on personal anecdotes to be included, clearly the moth condition story is going
to
be good.
I'm going to have to love you and leave you so I can get in this shot before it closes.
Get in there. Nick, thanks so much.
Not a bit, Steve. Take care.
The great Nick Luck, headed to the Cartiers this evening, and he'll have a new pair of slacks. That is funny, and I'm not worried about putting on some of my wool slacks and sport coats. I'm not worried about them having had moth damage. I'm concerned about some girth issues. putting on my some of my best camel hair blazer and the like and some others. Seth Merrow, good morning.
That was the first thing I thought when he brought up the story. What, he said he had the tux for 30 years?
Yes.
God bless him.
Well, look at him. He's been the same, right?
He's been in very good shape. But I was also thinking, that's why my back seat is so useful. Because if I went into my closet and I had moth damage, I would just go in the back seat and pull out a spare pair of pants. I'm always ready.
You're always ready, and moths. You know, moths don't really. You don't see them in the car that often either. So
exactly. Yeah, that's right. The moths do not hang out in the car. So I knew there was another good reason for that whole thing.
That is one of the funnier things that has. We've been treated to with Nick. He's made me laugh, but that was classic moth, the moth-eaten tuxedo. That I don't know. I don't think this is not the function where he's up for his 14th presenter of the year award. I mean, he's won like 8, 9, 10 of them. But the Cartiers this evening. In fact, here's the nominations. Actually, I've just they just came out a day or two ago. Cartier, the horse of the year, Baid, Mishriff. It would be tough to deny Saint Mark's Basilica and that Torquator Tasso, who won the Arc. 3-year-old Adyar, Baid, Hurricane Lane, and Saint Mark's Basilica. Philly, Alcohol Free, Mother Earth, Saffron Beach, and Snowfall, etc. 2-year-olds. Let's see any of our some of the good ones. Okay, there's the Cartiers tonight, so you can look forward to that.
I'm just looking down I'm looking down the nominees too. Unlike our daily racing for our Eclipse Awards, doesn't look like there are media awards. So, but I know Nick has won a bunch of those Presenter of the Year awards.
Yeah. We've got at least one more day, actually really 2 days, because tomorrow Paul Matisse joins us. We'll get Paul's take. We'll get Nick Tamaro tomorrow, Friday as well. And as we continue to flesh out everything that went on Breeders' Cup weekend, and how was your Breeders' Cup weekend?
I thought it was a great couple of days of racing. Obviously, the crazy, end of the day on Friday was a little bit of a, a blip, certainly, to put it mildly. But otherwise, I thought, great 2 days of racing. I was disappointed Latruska couldn't kind of put an exclamation point on the season, but Nick's go ran well. Betting-wise, I hit an early pick four. I want to say it was the one that ended with Golden Pal. It's like $2.50 for 50 cents, so that was a decent start to Saturday. But otherwise, I was just kind of nibbling around the edges. So I played heavy. As they were heading to post time, I had Essential Quality over Nick's go. But either way, the probable pays on that exact were right around $22. So I jumped in pretty good on the exacta. So if Essential Quality had gotten up, it would have been a good weekend, but it just couldn't get up. I think like Nick just said, kind of a grinder, and just didn't have that turn of foot to get up over Medina Spirit late. So that was a little bit disappointing. But otherwise, I thought the racing was great. I mean, it's just there was fun results, and I think a little bit of everything for folks, that were looking for prices and favorites. And you had some performances where horses validated themselves, and then some, like you say, the Wayne Catalano runner was fun, and that was I had that horse in my mix, so that was interesting as well. So I thought overall it was a fun weekend of betting, no question about it. It was I'll tip my hat to your guy, the long shot lad there, and Marsh Lorraine, very good.
Well, Kev had. Regarding the punditry, I mean, Kev had a spectacular couple
of
days.
What is exactly, because he had Marsh Lorraine, is it all way, each way? And I'm never sure. Is that like is that like our equivalent of a win place or a win show? Or
I'm not sure how that... it's all the placements that they pay, essentially.
Okay.
So he's you know, he's betting across the board, as it were, for each, you know, for each available placement. And you know, he had your beer on top, and had a straight win bet, and actually had Tiona got second. He had would have had that exacta. He gave out Marche Lorraine was his second choice, but he offered a win place, you know, essentially. He liked like me with Edgeway. We both keyed off of Edgeway, so he had a little place money there. He had some place money on Restrained Vengeance, show money, essentially. His biggest, one of his biggest win bets of the day was on Love's Only You. Just a great job. I mean, Kev is, you know, Kev approaches it. He's not afraid, you know, he's not afraid to bet a horse like Marche Lorraine, you know, that certain things are going to have, a bunch of things are going to have to happen for a horse like that to win. And he, you know, he wants to be in position just like he was with Torcador Tasso in the arc, you know, 70-1 shot. And he's, you know, he wants that horse covered because the ground is going to be to his liking. And, you know, it's just that simple. And he's not afraid to be completely wrong, you know, six times, and then, you know, catch a $100 horse. That's his approach at Cheltenham. It's his approach at Ascot and Goodwood and Dubai and Hong Kong. I mean, he's, you know, he looks for a kernel of hope in a horse's makeup or in the conditions of the race. And, well, you know, pace extremes, for instance. And, you know, it only takes one hit on a weekend like this, and he had three or four of them.
Yeah, no, that was a great call. And you know, even if you're doing that, even if you're kind of looking for the crazy horses, you got to have the right crazy horse, because there's a lot of prices on Breeders' Cup weekend. And to land on that one, that was I had pulled up the picks earlier in the day, and then I went back and we looked at them later, and I thought, man, that was a nice afternoon. Certainly, just with Marche Lorraine, but as you say, there was a few other ones in there as well.
Well, and you know, he had Modern Games. I mean, we all were, you know, we all picked Modern Games. But Papa Cap was his juvenile horse, and Papa Cap ran well. Let's see, who else on Friday? That was really the key, I guess. I think did he have the exacta in the? No, he needed. He did have Go Bears Go in the juvenile turf sprint mix, but overall, I mean, from a analysis standpoint, you know, there was no shortage of. I'm just reaching for the. There it is. See who else since we went down this road. I want to see who else. We did not have a great season with the betting companion this year. We, you know, there were plenty of winners, but when it came to the wagers, actually the only wager that hit was my backup exacta ticket that had CC and Edgeway, and I pretty much was keying off Edgeway in the filly and mare sprint, and that was $111 exacta, which you know, kind of got the day going. Jay Pridman pushed Love's Only You and Warlike Goddess on everybody. Duke suggested Restrained Vengeance as a try player in the dirt mile. That was smart. Just kind of looking up and down here. We had quite a few people note that McKinnon was usable underneath, at least in the juvenile turf. That was good.
The week before, when we were on the air with the pre-entries, I mentioned Pizza Bianca, and then I was not a big fan of Malavat, so I missed the exacta there, but I did like Pizza Bianca in my mix.
Good job.
I said, I brought that one up because I thought the race up in Canada was kind of promising, and that was a fun story too. See Christophe Clément get his first Breeders' Cup victory.
To get off the duck, absolutely. Scully liked Tiona in the mix underneath and as usable. Those were some of the. Based on my what I do is I've got like 14 different colored flare pens, and so when we get to days like this and to Derby and whatnot, I mark everybody's, I give everybody a different color.
Ah.
See, that's how the sausage gets made, Seth.
Yeah, very good. And I didn't see parsed out. I'm curious. I read a few of the articles. I didn't read it, but I didn't do a deep dive, and I don't know whether anybody did. I'm curious because the handle was so good. I'm curious how the Japanese runners played into that because it opens the betting up over in Japan, obviously, with those horses in. And I'm just wondering, you know, 11, how much 11, have they jumped in on this on the record handle?
11.7 million, I reported earlier today.
Okay. All right. Yeah, very good. Because I said that had to play into the record handle. They love to bet.
A little bit. The estimates are that about 30% of the handle was computer money, which is not unusual. That's an industry number. So it was amazing, actually. I was a little surprised that when the handle record whatever press release came out, just because the two tiny fields, the five horse field in the sprint,
yeah,
and the small field in the juvenile fillies, I thought would inhibit the totals. But you had all the turf races were populated and were full fields, and so made up for it, I guess.
Yeah, and then there was more money left on the table with the last race on Friday, so it was an even bigger number in reality. But
well, and I'm just one thing I did not announce, and I was kind of a little frustrated. I didn't spend more going after the all turf. The all turf pick four, because I was live to three horses, and Yabir was, like a C horse for me. I think I had fifth in the pecking order. The all turf pick four paid $914.60. And to be honest, that, Space Blues was 2-1. Love's Only You was, call it 9-2, and Golden Pal was 5-2. So those were very mundane, and Yabir was 8-1. That paid, if I were to do the parlay, this thing well outpaid the parlay.
I'll give a shout out too to my sister Nat, who ran very. There was some super finishes also on the weekend, and my sister Nat ran very well. And then the photo finish. I will agree with Nick Luck. I don't think it's just the Breeders' Cup. I'm surprised by the way a lot of tracks have to really take a look at the. I've been doing the TV show some afternoons, doing the handicapping show, and there'll be a photo finish. And I'll come on the air and I'll say, I think they went to the local CBS. They're still developing the pictures. I can't figure out why sometimes it's all digital now. It's just, and I'm sure it's just a placing judge kind of thing. They want to be precise and don't want to make a mistake. But boy, there are some that just leave you scratching your head with the time you wait.
The all turf pick four paid twice the parlay.
That was a great addition, too, I think.
Yeah. And you know what? The one thing I didn't say, let's see what the handle was on that. I'm curious if that, did that handle?
I just had it here. It was...
Jeez, it only handled $70,000.
$70,000, yeah.
Wow. I'm a little surprised that I would have thought that would have handled more than that.
Yeah, because the pick three that ended with that beer race, the pool was $465,000. Well, first year, I guess people are just picking up on it.
Yeah.
And it was also a dollar minimum.
Well, the... oh, good point, actually. So, wait a minute. Now that you say that, I'm glad. Yeah, I forgot that it was a dollar minimum. Now you're going to make me look back, Seth. Was that, how did they report it? They did report it for a dollar. So actually it paid the parlay because of the $19. Okay, it did not.
Right.
It paid the parlay because I divided by four. I was looking for a 50-cent number. So it paid. Paid a little under, actually, because the parlay would have been just a little under $1,100. Interesting. So, you know what's amazing about that would only handle $70,000 is that the Keeneland all turf pick threes were handling $100,000 a day that they created. You know. I would have thought that offered some momentum out of the Keeneland concept. But, all right. Did you look at Churchill today? Something. Oh, that we lost Seth, didn't we, Case? We lost Seth. All right. Well, let me... if you want to get him back, I guess you could. Otherwise, I'll start to look to tomorrow. And there we go. There's Indiana, which we'll do tomorrow. We'll have both Bill Downs and a visit.
I'm back. You lost me.
I figured that. Just starting to look ahead. Are you playing this Indiana pick five tomorrow? Are you in this thing?
No.
All right. Did you look at Churchill today?
I did.
Well, give us a play. Come on.
Let me see. Oh, 10th race, the last race. Kind of a fun maiden claimer, expensive claimer, $150,000. But I went 3, 8, 9, and 4. I thought one more baby. I like Cairo Prince runners first time out of the box. This one didn't live up to that. But I always say if you get... some of these horses that have the win early breeding and they don't live up to it in the first start, first couple of starts, first three starts, and then they change something up, I jump on again. And this one debuted on a swampy track, sprinting 7 furlongs, now goes 2 turns. So I thought this one, with the education under the belt, 10-1 on the morning line, I have one more baby on top. The McPeak runner with plenty of experience going to Maiden Special Weight, the Maiden Claiming. Number 8, Wicked Genius, looks interesting. And then Hippodrome for Dallas Stewart. Man, he just is on a roll. He's been having a good 2021, but the opening day at Churchill was great for Dallas. And so he's just on a little bit of a roll, so I threw in that one as well. So I have a 3, 8, 9, and 4 in the 10th at Churchill.
10th at Churchill. Seth Merrow, everybody. Watch for him on Capital OTB. Seth, I appreciate it, and I'll catch up next week. And I got to see, actually, I'm not going to ship that box. I've got that box from Country Life Farm for you, and I've got to get it to you. Maybe we'll hook up with Tom Law for lunch next week because he's got
my good thing. I'm curious to see what I'm getting.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to love so much. Seth Merrow, everybody.
Good luck to everybody today.
There we go. Seth Merrow, Nick Luck, Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, and HKJC Action with Dick Powell, and we got you ready for day one of Keeneland and recapped Phasing with Brian DiDonato of TDN. Good luck today, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Some Tony Black and much, much more. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. Podcast and archive as well to catch up on anything you missed today. Thanks. Talk to you tomorrow. The latest-
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds. And we endorsed the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.